Our reading this morning, our first reading, is from the book of Exodus. The next day, Moses sat as judge for the people, while the people stood around him from morning until evening. When Moses' father-in-law saw all the people and what Moses was doing, he said to Moses, "What is it that you're doing for these people? Why do you sit alone while all the people stand around you from morning until evening?" Moses said to his father-in-law, "Because the people come to me to inquire of God. When they have a dispute, they come to me and I decide between one person and another, and I make known to them the statutes and instructions of God." Moses' father-in-law said to him, "What you're doing is not of any good. You are surely wearing yourself out, both you and these people who are with you, for the task is too heavy for you. You cannot do it alone. Now listen to me. I will give you counsel, and God be with you. You should represent the people before God, and you should bring their cases before God. Teach them the statutes and instructions, and make known to them the way they are to go and the things that they are to do. You should also look for a few men among the people, men who fear God, who are trustworthy and who hate discontent and who hate dishonest gain. Set such men over them as officers, over thousands, hundreds, fifties, and tens, and let them sit as judges for the people at all times. Let them bring every important case to you, but decide every minor case themselves. So it will be easier for you, and you will bear the burden with you. If you do this, and God so commands you, then you will be able to endure, and all these people will go home to their place." So Moses listened to his father-in-law and did all that he said to do. Our second reading is from John. Let us listen to the word of God. About the middle of the festival, Jesus went up into the temple and began to teach. The Jews were astonished at it and say, "How does this man have such learning? And when has he never been taught?" Then Jesus answered them, "My teaching is not mine, but his who sent me. Anyone who resolves to do the will of God will know whether the teaching is from God or whether I am speaking on my own. Those who speak on their own seek their own glory. But the one who seeks the glory of him who sent him is true, and there is nothing false in him. Did not Moses give you the law? Yet none of the ones you keep the law. Why are you looking for an opportunity to kill me?" The crowd answered, "You have a demon. Who is trying to kill you?" Jesus answered them, "I performed one work, and all of you are astonished. Moses gave you circumcision. It is, of course, not from Moses, but from the patriarchs. And you circumcise a man on the Sabbath. If a man receives circumcision on the Sabbath in order that the law of Moses may not be broken, are you angry with me because I heal a man's whole body on the Sabbath? Do not judge by appearances, but judge by right judgment." Hear what the Spirit is saying.
Thanks be to God.
Good to see everybody this morning. I want to say a word of encouragement. This month, we are having two trainings for people who feel a leaning or a draw or a calling to teach adult Bible study. We did a sort of experiment with the congregation around spiritual gifts. One of the spiritual gifts is the gift of being a teacher. So if you have a spiritual gift in that direction, we'd like to really encourage you to think about being part of two classes that are happening this month to prepare people to teach disciple Bible study. And then we're going to offer a whole new group of disciple Bible studies this coming February. And so I want to encourage you to think about that. If you're leading, if your gifts are in the area of apostleship, or prophecy, we have a lot going on in our social justice mission advocacy work at the beginning of the year. We're going to have a week at the end of January with a focus on homelessness. There'll be training to participate in the annual count of homeless people in Washington, D.C. They'll be training in advocacy. They'll be organizing. We also are having a group that's gathering to ask the question of how we can be part of ending the cradle-to-prison pipeline, where young people, African-American males, if things don't change, one out of three being born, will spend time in the corrections system. One out of six Hispanic boys being born will spend time. So we have a group of people who want to look at that. We have another group of people who are organizing to say, what about our work with day laborers and immigrants? And so there's a lot happening in the mission area. Watch our bulletin, go to our website if you're interested in Led to Teach Bible Study. Talk to Pastor Teresa for our mission work. Talk to Pastor Kevin. And I really want to encourage you in the beginning of a new year to think about how you might grow in your discipleship and service of the God of justice and inclusion. Let's begin by praying for each other. If you'd look to the person sitting to your left and look to the person sitting to your right, keep an image of them in your mind, and please close your eyes for prayer. I'd invite you to pray silently for the person sitting on your left, that something that happens today in this worship service, before the service, after the service, might speak into their lives at whatever their point of growth, need, and possibility is today. And pray for the person sitting on your right, that wherever they are in their journey, God might minister to them this morning. And then pray for yourself that through the music song, the words spoken, and even words not spoken, that you might be able to receive the word that God would speak into your life today. Amen. So we're taking this month to talk about making change in our lives, beginning new journeys. January is a good month to do this. Many of us are thinking perhaps about changes that we'd like to make in our lives. Some of us might want to exercise more. Some of us might want to stop smoking or drinking. Some of us might want to get new jobs or even new careers. Some of us might want to fall in love and have a committed relationship. Some of us might want to make a determination to work at our relationships in new ways this year. Some of us might be thinking about becoming parents. Some of us might want to relocate. We might want to grow spiritually and have a deeper relationship with God. Lots of us are thinking about changes in our lives at this time of the year. And then sometimes change happens to us whether we're thinking about it or not. Sometimes our new journey in life can be a forced march. The lab results come back positive. Our spouse or partner doesn't want to be with us anymore. The company is downsizing. Sometimes the change that happens in our life is not voluntary. And then there are other times when longed-for changes in our lives have happened, and we didn't realize what the implications of that change would be beforehand. Maybe we become a parent and it changes our lives in ways that we never expected. Or we've succeeded in our work at just about everything we wanted to do, and now we've sort of lost interest in the work that we've been doing. We've been wanting more intimacy in our life, but when we fall in love, suddenly it changes our life in ways we would have never guessed. Everything is different now. Sometimes even the good things that happen in our lives can take our lives in new directions that result in change we never expected. So we want to think about change. We want to think about beginning new journeys. And we, to do that, are following the story of the journey of the Israelites toward the Promised Land just after they have crossed through the Red Sea, just at the very beginning of their new journey. And we're looking at this story in order to see what we can learn from them about change and new journeys in our own life. The Israelites are in the process of making a very, very big change. From slavery to freedom, from oppression to self-determination, from powerlessness to responsibility. What can we learn about change in our life from the Bible's description of their experience? Last week, we observed that the Israelites, 45 days into their journey, wanted to go back to Egypt because the food that was available to them on their journey was not the same kind of food they were used to eating back in Egypt, and they were afraid that they were going to starve to death on their journey. They were used to meat, red meat, and they were used to onions and garlic, and the Bible doesn't say it, but probably even chocolate. And when they discovered that their new journey, the change in their life, meant that those things would not be available to them anymore on their journey, they wanted to go back to slavery. And what they learned was that God would provide for them on their journey. It might not be the way it used to be, it might not be the way they wanted it to be, but change would not kill them. They would survive. Today, I'd like us to look at what Moses had to learn as a result of the change in his life. Moses had been very successful in Egypt. Very successful. He had taken a disempowered, disorganized, passive-aggressive group of oppressed people, and he had organized them and empowered them and led them out of slavery through the Red Sea. And now he was leading them on a new journey toward a promised land. What Moses discovers in the scripture lesson for the morning from Exodus was that what had worked for him back in Egypt and made him highly successful back in Egypt was not working for him anymore on a new journey. So Moses did what most of us do when change has come into our lives, and what made us successful in the past isn't working anymore. He kept doing what had made him successful in the past but wasn't working anymore, only harder. This is what we do. We keep doing what isn't working anymore, only harder when change comes into our life. Back in Egypt, Moses' style had been hands-on, handle every problem himself, tell every person exactly what to do and when to do it and to make sure they do it, micromanaging every detail of the liberation movement that had worked for him back in Egypt. He'd been successful there. But on this new journey, it isn't working anymore. So he does what we all do. He tries to micromanage even more, make every decision himself. He works from daylight past sunset until he is exhausted, and everybody else is exhausted as well, waiting, spending most of their time waiting to get a word from Moses so that they will know what to do. This is what we do when what has made us successful in the past doesn't work anymore. Hypothetical. Illustration. Say you are a very clear extrovert and you are married to a very clear introvert. Let's say that You won this introvert's heart by entertaining her and making her happy during your courtship. And then you marry, and you are together all day. And when she comes home from work, as she sometimes does, distracted and unhappy, you try to do what made you successful in your courtship, which is to engage her and entertain her and make her happy. And the more you try to do that, the more she tries to hide from you when she gets home from work so that she can have a few minutes of peace. You finally say to her, "Sweetheart, just tell me what's wrong." And she says to you, "When I got home today, the problem was something that happened at work. But now the problem is that you will not give me 2 minutes of peace." The hypothetical illustration is intended to illustrate that often what worked for us in our courtships may not work during the journey called marriage, and trying harder to do what used to work only makes it worse. What used to work when we were part of a department of 5 people may not work when we're part of a department of 25 people. What used to work when we were rank and file may not work anymore when we are supervisors. And trying harder to do it the way it used to work in another time and in another place and on a different journey only makes it worse. The international politics that worked during an age of nation states may not work during a time of insurgency. And only trying harder to do it the way that it used to work will only make it worse. And isn't war the ultimate example of trying harder and harder? Dawn mentioned my brother's death. My brother, Nevin, was an army chaplain. He was chaplain for the soldiers who fought in the Battle of the Idrang Valley, where 72 American soldiers died. It was the first major loss of life in the war in Vietnam. My brother served communion to some of the soldiers the night before who would die the next day. And as chaplain, it was his job to identify the bodies. So he spent a day checking the tags of 72 dead soldiers. He told me he smoked a cigar while he did it, because it masked the smell of death. And he was a soldier, even though he was a chaplain, and so he would rather be smoking a cigar and look manly than to be losing his lunch or crying. There were wounds that my brother came home from Vietnam with that were never healed. And one of the things that I've been angry about all week is that we have another generation of veterans who will have to live with the cost of war. When I'm not sure that the rest of us have been very smart about the wars we've asked them to fight. After 9/11, we were so determined to try harder and harder and harder what wasn't working anymore that we sacrificed lives. I may be wrong. There's people who know more about this than me. But it's what I've been feeling this week. I have, because of my brother, inordinate, just amazing respect for those who are part of our military. They do what we instruct them to do. And many pay a price. You know that we've started a corporation to develop permanent supportive housing for the homeless called Be the Change, and the focus of this housing, at least half of it, will be dedicated to homeless veterans, because the percentage of veterans who are homeless is way out of proportion to the rest of the population. And we believe that we have an obligation to those whom we've asked to go fight wars for us. And the rest of us need to get much smarter about what we ask young men and women to do on our behalf. War is the ultimate example, I think, so often, of trying harder and harder to do what isn't working anymore. Albert Einstein's definition of insanity was doing the same thing and expecting different results. Someone else has defined neurosis as doing what isn't working, only harder. So the first point I want to try to make this morning is that this is what Moses did and what we all do on a new journey. Trying to do what made us successful in the past but isn't working anymore, only harder. The second point is this. Moses was so caught up in the situation that he was in, so buried in trying to do harder what wasn't working, that it never occurred to him that what used to work wasn't going to work anymore. Never occurred to him to examine the basic assumptions of what he was doing. He needed someone from the outside, someone from outside the situation to help him get perspective. For Moses, it was his father-in-law, Jethro. Jethro was a Midian priest. Jethro wasn't even an Israelite. He wasn't even part of the same religion of Moses and the Israelites. He had no shared assumptions, no shared history. It took someone completely outside the system to say, "Hey, Moses, what you are doing isn't working. What you are doing is only making things worse. And if you keep doing it, you're going to kill yourself and all the people with you." It took someone from totally outside the system to help Moses get perspective. Moses could have never seen it on his own. He needed a consultant. His father-in-law, Jethro, was the first consultant in human history. All of us, when change comes into our life, maybe even a change we've been praying for, we need help learning how to live in the new place in which we find ourselves. We all need outside help when change comes. We need a consultant, we need a therapist, we need a spiritual director, we need a small group, we need a prayer partner. Some of the best money I've ever spent in my life, I've spent on consultants and therapists who could help me get perspective on the issues of my life where I was so deeply ingrained in trying to do harder and harder what wasn't working anymore that I couldn't see the full picture without help from someone outside the situation. And the last thing before we have communion I want to say this morning, the first thing is sort of all of us do it, change comes into our life. What used to work for us doesn't work anymore. We try to do it harder and harder. We get worn out and tired and more frustrated. And because things aren't working, we try to do the same things harder and harder. And then it takes help from outside the situation. All of us, one of the most important things all of us need to know is when to ask for help. We need help from outside of the situation to break the loop that we get ourselves into. And the one more thing I want to say this morning is when the early Christians were trying to understand just who this Jesus was who had changed their lives, they came to the conclusion that Jesus was a consultant sent from heaven to help a humanity who were trying harder and harder and succeeding less and less. Jesus was the one sent from heaven to teach us that trying harder and harder to follow the law and to save ourselves so that we might be justified through our own works and efforts, that wasn't working anymore. And that what we needed rather than trying harder was grace, accepting love as a gift, not a reward. Giving up our attempt to totally control our own lives and the world around us, and trusting God and trusting others. Jesus was God's gift to all humanity to teach us that the way of the law, the way of trying harder, isn't working, but the way of love will work. And he can still teach us if we will learn today.